last Yes to Life show of 2016. Today I've got an inspirational guest for you, but first I want to say a little about 2016 and the landmark developments that we've seen recently in the field of integrative medicine. If you're new to the world of cancer and cancer treatment, you may not know that integrative medicine is the umbrella title for the broadest possible synthesis of conventional and complementary methods, a fast-developing field that's uncovering the many ways in which approaches from the two branches can support one another to improve results and quality of life. From where I stand in Yes to Life, pushing forward an initiative to make integrative medicine the norm in UK hospitals, 2016 has actually been a great year. Things have definitely moved on. And the most significant way they have moved has been with regard to the way that cancer is seen and therefore it's treated. Thomas Seyfried's game-changing book, Cancer as a Metabolic Disease, a hefty science tome and definitely not on my reading list, set the scene for a renewed interest and confidence in the view of cancer as a process that's got out of control, and needs reining in, controlling, a very different picture to the rogue genes that need destroying before they destroy us. Seyfried's book, now maybe 3 or 4 years old, reinforced the pioneering work of Mina Bissell in California, who demonstrated in the lab that the primary factor that influences the progress or otherwise of cancer is the health of the surrounding tissue. A terrain, as it's called, that is healthy will clean up any disorderly cells and it will actually revert to being healthy. Way back in the 1980s, Barbara Israel and Warren Schaefer had already demonstrated that the nucleus of a cell has no influence on the development of cancer. This was a crucially important discovery that was almost entirely ignored by the scientific community, which was hell-bent rushing headlong towards the unbelievably costly Human Genome Project that is now looking to be largely a massive red herring. Israel and Schaefer demonstrated that a nucleus from a cancerous cell inserted into a healthy cell does not produce cancer, whereas the reverse, a healthy nucleus into a damaged cancerous cytoplasm, does. This result should move the focus of attention away from the nucleus and its genes, damaged or otherwise, to the surrounding cytoplasm, where the processes of the cell are carried out, in particular, the generation of energy, or ATP. Add to this the recent development of epigenetics, in which genes, which were once seen as a passed-down recipe from our parents that we simply had to live with, for better or worse, were understood to be merely potential problems that could be influenced by our environment, by our lifestyle, into becoming problems, or into never being an issue at all. All of this new science should by now have turned the thinking about cancer on its head. But of course, in the world of science, and particularly medicine, change is painfully slow. New ways of thinking threaten existing commercial realities, so opposition to change is ferocious. Foundational figures such as James Watson, of Watson and Crick DNA double helix fame, have lost faith in the potential for gene theory to deliver the hoped-for miracle-targeted therapies. And now, as a final rebuff to the gene theory, we have theoretical physicist and cosmologist Paul Davies weighing in, with support from his NCI-funded researches for the metabolic view of cancer and for taking a very different approach to cancer treatment. This year's flagship Yes to Life conference was a one-day overview of the current thinking on metabolics and cancer, and amongst a stellar lineup of speakers, we opened the conference with an interview with Paul Davies. Just listen to what he had to say about how we should be treating cancer.
So these are ways that physicists and engineers can begin to think about how we can control cancer through controlling the physical microenvironment. And I'm convinced myself that people of our age, if I may put us in the same category, probably riddled with cancer, to use a scary expression. What does that mean? It means there are lots of cancer cells in our bodies being perfectly controlled by the body's mechanisms, including in healthy tissues. A healthy physical environment in a tissue contributes to keeping those cancer cells in check. We think of cancer as something that goes wrong and somebody has symptoms and they go to a doctor and they're diagnosed with cancer. But you can ask, well, what was the lead up to that? And the lead up was probably that we've got these cancers all over the place, but something in the tissue microenvironment tips it over the edge and causes it to grow and present clinical symptoms. If we can just think in those terms, that cancer is something we live with every day, mostly without any problem. It's something that when it presents a problem, we need to control, not eradicate. There's no need to get rid of the cancer. It's only in very late stages that people actually start to get ill. You can live with a tumor, if we can just adopt that method of trying to think of control and use some of those physical parameters to control.
That refreshingly different view of cancer, coming from the very top of the scientific community, totally underlines the work of Yes to Life in pushing the agenda for integrative medicine. I can't tell you what a difference this makes to the standing of both integrative medicine and Yes to Life. Videos of the conference will shortly be on sale and will include all the speakers, that's Travis Christofferson, Rob Verkirk, Patricia Daly, Ndaba Mutsubiko, and Jane McClelland, as well as Paul Davis, who you've just heard. Keep an eye on social media for availability. I also plan to do a programme on the conference early next year to bring you some highlights. And at the close of 2016, what was so encouraging was to hear of medical herbalist Kate Scott's reception from an oncology team, which I featured in the show a couple of weeks ago. You might think that this was just an isolated incident and doesn't mean much. But actually, it would have been unthinkable for her to generate any interest from oncologists a very short while ago. Things really are shifting. At last. Well, enough of my ramblings. On now to our inspirational guest. I was delighted to meet up recently with athlete turned mentor and coach, Michelle Robinson. Michelle is doing some great work with young people through the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust. We met in St Pancras International in London. Good afternoon, Michelle. Thanks very much for coming on the Yes to Life show.
My absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Right, so one of the first things I know about you is the fact that your work with the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust,
yeah.
Which fantastic organisation, they're doing some amazing work. You're helping people who've been, particularly young people, who've been through a whole range of traumatising situations. Well, first of all, what made you want to do something to help in this way?
Well, I think it all stems from, coming to a crossroads when I retired from athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine gave me a phone call and said, Michelle, I think you'd be a great mentor and coach.
Mm.
And I said, what does that entail? And, you know, at this point you're thinking, okay, I need to make this transition. I'm doing a bit of personal training, but actually I need something to really put my teeth into.
Right.
And mentoring. So I found out a little bit, dabbled with a few companies, did a few motivational speeches everywhere, and felt pretty positive about things. And then the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust contacted me, a guy called Adam, and he said, Michelle, we worked on previous programs together.
Mm-hmm.
How about you run a program for us, be the lead athlete, lead Olympic athlete in Kent? And I said, okay, all right, let me see about the programs. All right, let's see. How much time is it going to take up? And being a mother of three as well, I thought, let me be realistic here, you know. And I actually landed into it, and I've got to be honest with you, Robin, it's the best thing I've done.
Mm.
I say to people, I feel so enriched every time I leave my door to go to work for the trust. I feel enriched because I'm giving back. Without somebody giving back to me in my athletics career, which was my best friend's dad, Mick Stead, I wouldn't have achieved what I achieved in my career.
Right.
So now it was time for me to actually find out what
right.
I need to give back.
Right. And it's interesting to find out what you have got to give back, of course. It's only
yeah.
when you start doing it you find out. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You see.
Brilliant. Okay, so most people know about you because of your inspirational career
yeah.
in athletics. So maybe you want to just give us the highlights and just tell us.
Oh gosh, I got so
everybody.
Many highlights. I said this, my 10-year-old daughter said to me the other day, was she really that good? And I said, that's a matter of opinion, but you know, for my
no,
listeners
it must
out
be objective.
There.
Come
said,
on,
yeah,
you
said,
actually
look,
got
I
some
good?
Times and some
I said,
winnings.
14 meters 08. I was the first ever woman to jump over 14 meters in the triple jump in the Commonwealth.
Right.
So I guess for that I broke a barrier there. So that's often good when you're asking your child to stretch a bit more, do their best, try and break barriers, create history, be a pioneer of something. So yes, I did very well in my athletics career. Started off as a useless long jumper, I've got to be honest, and found my niche.
Right, how interesting. So, okay, there's one barrier you broke. What else did you do along the way?
Along the way, I won 10 national titles, 10 Great Britain national titles for triple jump.
Wow.
I went to 3 World Championship finals.
Mm.
I went to 1 Olympic Games, 2 Commonwealth Games, and Commonwealth Games I talk about really fondly.
Mm.
Because that's where I actually met my husband in 2002.
Can't be bad.
So it can't be bad, you know, you're mixing a bit of social with actually an ability there. And here we are 14 years later, me and Matthew. So, yeah.
Excellent.
It's been a great, illustrious, pretty career. Mm. A lot of ups, a lot of downs.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that is what makes you who you are.
And a lot of hard work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I knew somebody who was in the Olympic team.
Yeah.
And I got some sense of just what it took, you know, and it's like... Yeah.
It's only when you retire that you actually think, I used to do all that 6 days a week, not celebrating Christmas much because I'd be at the track and, you know, but and sacrificing going out. But I often say to people, there's no better party than an Olympic party.
Mm-hmm. So just to home in on one thing, you see, you actually created a new record there, which is it's something about the mindset of that. That you're going beyond what people generally say is possible, and maybe you even think, it's not possible, you're somewhere inside you as well.
Yeah.
And you've got to overcome all these obstacles. Now, this is actually not a million miles from the kind of situation a lot of the people who call us up are in, because they've been told, look, you don't stand a chance. You will be dead in 3 months' time. We know for sure, you know. And we have some very determined people, and they actually don't take that kind of thing lightly, and they just take it on and get going and show that it can be otherwise. But it does take a very particular kind of mindset, doesn't it? Do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I think the great thing about having a positive mindset and recognising that you can overcome challenges and barriers, don't get me wrong, clearly not easy for somebody that's suffering from anything. You know, if you talk about the cancer sufferer here, for example, they've been told they've got 3 months to live. Now, someone tells me I've got 3 months to live, I'm trying everything in my power to let that person know, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Right, it's a challenge.
Yeah, you want it? Yeah, let's bring it on. Let's throw down the gauntlet. Let's do this, because there's a bigger picture out there.
Mm.
You know, and I think it's all about the positive mindset and switching it on. So naturally, now we're going to have to go into Olympic mode, the best I can be, because I want to see through my child going to university, see my grandkids, you know, or actually just see through the next year.
Yeah, it's very often the case that somebody does have a personal goal like
absolutely.
That, where they really felt they didn't want to miss some life event to do with their children or their family. And that is a huge inspiration to them.
Keeps you going. And everybody needs a driver. Even with my young people, I'm saying to them, imagine something, have a vision, have an outcome, have a goal.
Right. So there's a lot of talk about the placebo effect and its opposite within medicine, and how these statistical prognoses, which don't actually apply to any individual, they only apply to large groups of people, where somebody's given, you know, the sentence of how long they're going to live.
Yeah.
And the effect this has on people in the negative way of actually limiting their lifespan by limiting their forward-lookingness, their hope, their optimism about their life, and that they, of course, is part of the life force in a way that's in them, is their forward-looking, hopeful piece.
Absolutely, it's. I think when you've been told something, and you think, actually, if I constantly tell myself I'm gonna get to, you know, we used to have stickers up, you know, and I'm making reference to a lot to do with track and field and the positive mindset that you have to have.
Right.
Stickers up saying, I'm making that Olympic final. I'm making that Olympic final. Every day you repeat the cycle. I'm making that. In fact, you start visualizing yourself on the podium.
Right.
You know, and even if you don't, I mean, I've done this several times. I know I'm not an Olympic finalist, but my visual was, I'm making the final. Because if I just said, oh, you know what, I'm just making the team, or I'm not even making it, then actually, it's a strong possibility I won't even make it.
Yeah. And so that's very interesting, isn't it? Because that's actually influencing your physical capability, because it's something physical you're doing, but it's your state of mind.
It's a state of mind
that is enabling you to do that.
Absolutely.
So that's not a million miles from actually dealing with an illness.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Mm. And I've been at the hands of, unfortunately, how I ended up in Kent was because of my husband's mum, sister and aunt passed away within 1 year and 8 days. Two of the three of them from cancer.
I saw that. So it's your husband's family has been incredibly hard hit,
hasn't it? The whole lot of them from Matthew was 15 and he's now in his early 40s. He's suffered seven members of his family.
Wow.
Young, all under the age of 63. Mm. Yeah, the youngest was 33, the eldest was his mother at 63. You know, his uncle actually is a champion. Mm. Clive Sullivan was the first black captain of rugby league.
Right.
He died at a very young age of cancer.
Mm.
So they've been hit by it. So when I had no problem coming and talking to Yes for Life about this because actually, we all need to support this campaign.
We do. I mean, you know, the statistics are like absolutely shocking now. You know, with it being one in two, if you're born after 1960, it's one in two.
One
going
in
to get
two.
Cancer within their lifetime, yeah. So it's a very short hop from there to everybody getting it, if we keep going the way we're going. And, you know, all the, you know, hype about things getting better, you know, we're getting on top of cancer, beating it, forget it. The cancer rates are just going on and on up, you know. And, you know, some people may be surviving with cancer a bit longer, but they may be having a completely miserable life as well, you know, with a lot of pain and distress and worry about cancer coming back and all those things.
Yeah.
So that's not a great life to be having.
It's like
you
a ticking time bomb, isn't it?
It's like a ticking, exactly.
Yeah.
So we've got to do something about it. And we need to start asking the right questions, which are not really being asked by the major cancer charities. They're not really being asked by medicine, which is like about why we're getting cancer.
Yeah, because that's a simple thing.
Yeah.
Why are we getting, I mean, it's quite straightforward if you're able to ask somebody, why are we getting cancer? If I avoid that, but because they keep changing things all the time, Mr. and Mrs. Joe Blogg sit there and think, well, actually, I was told not to have that last week, but now I can have it this year. That week, you know, you don't know where you actually stand.
Right, I agree. It's a very messy picture, but I think there's some very big items in amongst there which are really not being sifted out from the myriad of minor things that could be affecting our lives, which all of those add up, of course, but they, in amongst them there's one or two really big ones that are actually really driving I think us towards more and more cancer. And those things, I say, well, nobody's really questioning them. Why? Because really they're good business mainly.
Yeah.
That's usually why.
Know.
You know, they're making a lot of money and so nobody wants to disturb the apple cart.
Can often happen that way, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately. Anyway, it's public education is what's needed. We need to wise up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get to know really what's going on,
what's
despite
going on.
All the business interests and everything else, which is starting to happen. You know, social media is amazing for people
informing
each other.
Informing each other
about what's going on.
But let's spread the right message. That's what we need to do. Let's spread the correct message. We need to get that. Social media is fantastic, but let's spread the right message. Let's let people be a bit more informed so they can make better informed choices before it's too late.
Absolutely right. So with your work in the Dane Kelly Holmes Trust, you're, as I say, you are helping people with traumatic life events that they've been faced with. One of those, I understand, is that people have lost parents or loved ones through cancer. That's, you know, it's going to happen with the kind of statistics we have. And so I'm interested to know how, in what way you think you can help these people.
Well, the thing about it is, because I work with such a vast amount of young people, I wouldn't say that I've had many of them. I've only had two people on my programs in the last 4 years that have, whose parents have passed away from cancer. But there's a lot of them that are carers. To parents, and that's an interesting point to make here.
It is.
They're carers to parents that have got terminal illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so and many, you know, whether it's cancer, Alzheimer's, dementia, a lot of the young people are carers. And if you think to yourself, this is a time at your age, if you're between 16 and 25, you should be out there, educated yourself, going out, having a night, socializing really well with your friends, having a great time, and actually getting out to see the world, and you're stuck in your house day in, day out. Then we bring on this course and we say to them, actually, we're not promising you the world, but what we are promising you is a bit more of an adventure than what you're used to.
Right.
So I had one girl on my program last week. I said to her, what's the best thing you've been on this program? It's the fact that I can get out of my bed every day and see a group of people that welcome me, that don't judge me. And that in itself, no, it's not an education, but actually when we break it down, the fact that we've broken down isolation, that she knows she's coming to us 2-3 times a week for 6 weeks. That's going to then let go of her anxiety that she suffered as well. So that opens up many different ways for her to go, exit routes for her. You know, I bumped into another boy at my celebration event the other day, and he said, I said, have you got a job yet? He said, no. Unfortunately, my father's got colitis, so I'm at home caring for him. He's also got cancer, so I'm caring for him. And that's quite sad.
No, it's a huge burden at that age.
Oh, my gosh. What a burden.
Yeah.
So you're constantly looking after the person there, but on top of that, can you really think about yourself when that's going on?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, the whole carer issue is a huge one, and we do speak to carers as well at Yes to Life, and they very often, in a curious way, suffer more than the people they're
Absolutely.
Caring for, because you're right, they have to be, they feel they have to be so completely selfless. Like, who am I to put any of my needs before this person
Absolutely.
Has got cancer?
Absolutely.
And they completely burn themselves out often with doing
yeah.
stuff. And with no attention to their emotional journey at all.
Absolutely.
Which it just has to go on the back burner, you know.
Absolutely. And I think this young person, Jess, won't mind me mentioning her.
Right.
She's an amazing success story. She came to us in 2013, having cared for her partner for 7 years, terminally ill with cancer. Forgot about herself. 7 years.
Seven years.
Yeah. She's only 25 now. Yeah. And she came on the program, and she said, I said, why have you come on the program? She said, just to get away. Just
right.
simply to get away. As it turned out, after many, many weeks of saying to her, you could do so much more. Yeah, she took her time, which is natural because she's had a bereavement at the end of this as
yeah.
well.
Right.
She now works for Mears, and she said she thanks the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust for putting on this program, the Get On Track program in Thanet, which has given her almost like a lifeline. And it worked because it coincided with just losing her partner and where she is today.
Right, right. Yeah, so sounds like she's really benefited just from having some people who are ready to listen and
take
as
heed.
As you say, not to really judge anything about
Absolutely.
What they should or shouldn't have been doing or how they did it or anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's a big deal. And yeah, it applies to carers, and it also applies to people with cancer. There are very strong judgments around the choices people make
yes.
in treatment.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
And, you know, first of all, there's the medical establishment that generally call
yeah.
anyone who wants to do anything else a
yeah.
bit of a nutcase,
yeah.
and you have to deal with that. Also, you can get an unfortunate situation where a person makes maybe a very rational decision to not just accept everything that they're offered at the hospital, but say, well, look, I'll do this bit, but this bit
yeah.
is not, you know, the risks are not, make it not worth
yeah.
the potential benefits.
Yeah.
So I'm going to miss that. And, you know, sometimes not only do they then come under fire from the medical team, but
yeah.
also from the whole family.
Honestly.
Who are, you know, really think they just, you know, they're being reckless and they want to, you know, they just, don't they care about their family? You know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's
so
terrible.
You can see how many... It almost has a domino's effect of how much it can affect, how much it does affect everybody in your family.
Yeah.
You know, my father-in-law said just last week, he said, if anybody I know had cancer, I'd tell him, don't do chemo. That was the catalyst to my mother-in-law passing away. You know, but she would have taken anything, any alternative therapy. She was up for anything.
Right.
But in the end, the 4 months, it wasn't long enough.
All right. So... I'm just interested to know how your work with young people, your experience with your husband's family and everything, how have your views of cancer changed over this whole period?
I don't know. I remember saying to my husband that I was first affected with cancer myself when I was about 11 years old. A neighbour across the road had a daughter and she had spinal cancer. She was
wow.
dead at 18.
Wow.
My mother's a ward sister. And I couldn't understand why we used to get so many packs of McVitie's biscuits. And it was their way of thanking my mum for after my mum would finish a 12-hour shift, going round there to care for Janet for an hour or two.
Wow.
And just make sure that she was getting looked after in her in her palliative care stage.
Yeah.
So I remember saying I was so frightened of the word cancer as an 11-year-old child.
Right.
And whereas now, having seen it and... actually first-hand experience in, you know, trying to feed my mother-in-law anything that she would get down her, you know. I think my opinion on it is each case is an individual. and it has to be down to the choices of the individual, but each individual has to get good information in order for them to make an informed decision of what they want to do.
Right, I'm pleased to hear you say that. I mean, that's precisely what Yes to Life is for. We're there to help people find out what they could do that could be helpful, and then
Absolutely.
Once they've made up their mind, we're there to help them to do that,
support,
whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
And whatever
we,
it is.
And we don't take any position of persuading people they should be doing this or that or the
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely.
It's up to them. And within the overall picture that actually with nearly every cancer, there's nobody who can say, yeah, we're definitely going to fix you. There's
Absolutely.
Only one or two cancers you can almost say that, but most you can't at all. So really nobody, I don't think, has got the right to be telling anybody what they should be
Absolutely.
Doing because there aren't any guarantees. You know?
None whatsoever.
You know, so who on earth are people to say you should do a particular kind of treatment that might work? So,
and that was my father-in-law's point of view, and obviously he's nursed his wife and feels very passionate about it, which is okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say once you've been given the information, and you need some hard, fast facts here.
Yeah, as far as you possibly can.
As possible you
right.
can.
Yeah.
To make you feel, actually, let's go for it.
Yeah. You've got to know what to put your money behind. And
there you go.
It's a mixture of facts and your own personal philosophy of life.
And you as an individual, how you are as an individual as well.
Yeah, and the sense you have of what's good for you, you know.
Absolutely.
And very important. And of course, all of that ties in very much with what we were talking about at the beginning, which is this your mindset.
Yeah.
If you're actually doing the thing which you think has got the best chance of making you well, that puts you in that position of going for it.
Absolutely.
If you're thinking you're doing it because your family said that you ought to,
you're not truly believing what you're doing. You're not truly believing what you're doing.
No.
And it's like every time. And this is an analogy I use to my young people. Every time I stepped on that runway, I was going to win.
Right.
Not the outcome wasn't that I did win, but I would not have stepped on that runway if I didn't feel I was going to give it 100% to win.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, this is a big race, and people need 100%.
Big race, biggest fight of your life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you'd need the support around you. And the support will come in any shapes, sizes, but just to know that it's got to be your choice.
Okay, so I want to talk about mindfulness now. I hear you're a bit of a fan of mindfulness. Why?
Getting more and more into it now. I think the whole mindfulness, taking stock, self-reflectiveness, the more and more I do coaching and mentoring, I think it plays a huge part. It's taken me on a journey over the last 3 years since I had my youngest child to become a little bit more aware, acutely aware of, you know, actually let me just sit, think, and almost regenerate what's going on in my thought process. Big place for it.
All right. Okay. And do you see it? I mean, that's something obviously you appreciate yourself in your own life. How do you see it relating to, like, say, the people who are being helped through the trust, who are in challenging situations? Do you think it's something that's helpful for them?
They're not ready for it yet.
Okay. What do you need in order to be ready for it?
They need instead of it being a six-week to 8-week program, they need a 6-month program seeing me constantly.
I see. Okay.
There are some that get it more than others. I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Okay.
There's some that are willing to explore. There are definitely some that are willing to explore that, but there's some that almost ridicule it.
Yeah, right, sure.
You know, so and who am I again
to force it on them?
To force that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's finding its way into all sorts of interesting areas of life, though, mindfulness, or even though it seems like, you know, 10 years ago it would have been pretty out to lunch stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's getting into business and politics, all sorts of places.
Absolutely.
It's setting up schools, you know.
Absolutely.
And which is pretty interesting, and it's around illness and cancer particularly a lot. It's one of something that a lot of people are interested in.
Good.
When they have cancer. I assume, well, there are two reasons that strike me. One of them is that, of course, one thing that cancer throws at you is enormous psychological challenges. Enormous, you know. Existential sized, you know, am I going to live?
Takes
kind
you
of,
right out of that comfort zone.
It really does.
Really does.
So there's all that. And then there's also the area of arriving at getting cancer with a load of unresolved issues and your whole life feeling maybe a complete mess.
And the
importance maybe of finding in amongst all that some kind of sanity, if you like. And so I think it has a lot to offer people in those areas. I mean, any thoughts on that?
Well, yet again, I can only say it's a positive thing. But I also believe that for something to have its best benefit, you have to believe in it.
Right.
For me, because I believe in it, it would work for me. But unless you have that complete belief in it or want to at least explore the avenue to go down and really make it work for yourself, you've got to be a believer in it. And I am, so.
Right. Okay. But on the level of, the more that science looks into the relationship between
that and the brain and everything else,
psychology and our body, the more it finds out that it's difficult to draw the line between the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one affects the other to such an extent that, say, you know, in some cases they're almost indistinguishable.
Yeah.
So within that, many people, you know, particularly some practitioners, would say it's actually looking into your state of mind and your relationship to life is as important as what you do and practically to deal with your cancer. And how do you feel about that?
I strongly agree. I think that the way your outlook, the way you can your brain is working, has a lot to do with, you know, your physical side of things. You know, the getting up in the morning, get up, dress up, show up, you know, even when you're struggling. I remember day seeing my mother-in-law struggling, but the fact that she got up, dressed up, showed up, sat downstairs, you know, put on some music, danced, you know. I think even that just made her feel like, no, I want to keep this, I want to keep this feeling of aliveness. You know, I think there's a strong correlation.
Okay. So probably your main role these days is as a motivator, is that right?
What's my main role? I wear several hats, Robin. Okay. I wear several hats. I wear my motherhood hat really well.
Okay.
And the imperfect, perfect mother. I've just got started some videos on YouTube.
Okay. So something you're getting public
I want to go public with it. I'm slowly making some changes. And yet again, happy to receive feedback. So I'm on YouTube under Michelle Griffith Robinson. I wear that hat quite well. I call myself the imperfect, perfect mother.
Okay.
I do my best. I try my best, and I want to be a role model to my children so that they can say, at least my mother tried her best.
Right.
Yeah. We all make mistakes, and I liken that hat that I wear very much to my athletics career, full of sacrifices, ups, downs, challenges, obstacles, and at the end of it all, who's to know where your children are going to end up? I wear my mentoring hat, my coaching hat, really well. I feel enriched, which is what I said previously in the show. I feel enriched by the job that I do. I want to continually keep impacting people's lives. And on a daily basis, I want to be the best I can be and help others.
If I put that all together in one package, you're definitely interested in inspiring people.
Inspiring others for change.
For change and for going beyond.
Going beyond.
Yeah.
Inspiring others for change, going beyond. Work outside your comfort zone. What's it to lose? Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Okay, so now you're just imagine you're sat down with somebody who who's just been given a very poor prognosis. They're maybe in the middle of treatment, they're battling with fatigue from the treatment, from the cancer. They feel quite sick a lot of the time, you know, and they're understandably down with this whole thing. You know, what kind of message have you got for them, do you think?
Put on your favourite music.
Okay.
And this is a real life experience. Yeah. Last week we put on a community event for 50 old people in Ramsgate. 50 isolated old people.
Right.
And I say old, excuse my viewers out there, I'm not too far behind you, but this was 55 plus.
Okay, yeah? I'm old.
So I mean, I'm not too far off it myself. And a lady there had Alzheimer's and cancer. Her daughter came up to me and said, thank you. And I said, thank you. I said, no, thank you for coming. Because without my audience, my young people couldn't put on such an amazing spread. She said, you've created a memory, but not for my mum, who probably won't remember it.
All right.
But for me to see my mum smiling, because the music, the songs you were playing, reminded her of a place, a happy place for her.
Right.
So my message to them would
big
be...
The power of music has, isn't
music.
Mm.
Okay. The power of music. You know, I always had a soundtrack that I listened to, which was by a producer called Sounds of Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Be Optimistic.
Right.
And I would urge every single patient out there, or somebody that's not necessarily suffering from cancer, but somebody that's going through trauma or struggling in their life, listen to your favourite soundtrack.
Okay.
Lift yourself up.
Yeah. So maybe like to finish up by just talking a bit about your views on what we're doing at Yes to Life.
Yeah.
So, Yes to Life, we're supporting what's called integrative medicine,
mm-hmm.
and integrative medicine in...
Integrative
is the word, the way
integrative.
It's described.
Okay.
Yeah. And an easy way of describing integrative medicine would be to say, well, whatever might help, actually. It doesn't exclude things, basically.
Yeah.
It includes all of orthodox medicine, everything they got down the hospital, if that's
as well
helpful.
As
well as the whole areas of psychological, emotional... anything, natural approaches, any complementary therapies, all of those things, diet particularly, you know, exercise, of course, it's the big new wonder drug, exercise for cancer. And so we're encouraging people to look as broadly as possible at their situation and to see anything that could help them from any of these areas.
Okay.
That's what we're supporting.
Yeah.
So how does that fit with your thinking about illness?
Well, I've got to be honest, that ticks all the boxes. Your food intake, what you're putting inside of you. If we start homing in, you know, onto, I'm not saying let's be perfect here and not have red meat, not have this, not have that, only live on fish. My thing is moderation.
Moderation, right.
Moderation is key. And what does moderation look like to an individual?
Right.
That's what it's different to everybody.
It is.
You know, some people say moderation is having 5 steaks a week. You know, so it's different to everybody else.
Right.
Finding out what is a moderate diet to somebody, moderate exercise. Well, the government ruling, I think, is 30 minutes of exercise per day. Activity, walking, brisk walking, blah, blah, blah. But maybe just for somebody, 10 minutes, 15 minutes might be enough.
Yeah, for some people, you're
for
right.
some people, let's not start putting everybody in a round hole in a round peg, which is sometimes what can happen with complementary medicines. Let's start exhausting. So 10 minutes of that, a change to your diet, a thought process, a different mindset.
Mm.
That might be the answer for some people.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, that's great. So, let's just say from orthodox medicine has this rather what we would see as one-dimensional way of looking at illness, which is it's just about some nasty cells that got away and we've got to kill them. And that seems to be so very far from the actual truth of the matter. And whereas some people can be treated on that basis and actually do all right, that's not a huge number of people.
I know.
And most people don't do all right, even if they actually can have people who are a clinical success.
Yes.
But actually their life, they don't want it. It's so bad they don't want it.
Yeah.
So that is not a success.
So damaging to your mental outlook as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a success. If somebody's mentally completely, all over the place,
drained
every day,
and everything else.
Yeah, that's not a life. So it's incredibly important to see the rounded person, the full person,
the holistic approach.
Yeah, and actually to address them in that kind of way.
Yeah.
To see what they need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. Anything else you'd like to talk about we haven't already talked about?
No, I'm amazed by Yes for Life. It's very humbling. I feel very honoured to be on here talking.
Great.
Because I think none of us know, and the statistics are so high.
Mm.
And my mum has the most amazing saying, live good with people, because you never know what's around the corner.
Right. She's right.
And Maya Angelou says, people will forget what you said, people will forget how you, you know, what you did, but people won't forget how you made them feel.
Mm.
And I think if you can help somebody out, and the fact that Yes for Life is this, it's a door, you know, and you open that door, that massive door, and you've got to be a courageous person to come into the door in the first place.
You have.
Let's be honest here. You
it's
have
true.
To show maximum amount of courage, almost like a Paralympian.
Mm. Mm. No, I think so. I have huge admiration for a lot of the people who come to us. They just, you know, when you have like someone who's been a nurse all their life, working in the NHS,
cared for people, and
all and that
then
stuff,
boom,
and they get cancer themselves, and they're given a terrible picture, you know, all the rest of it. They think to themselves, well, I wonder whether it's worth, and they make that call. I'm like, wow, you know, it's amazing.
Amazing.
It's got guts.
And it, and that's where I say it gives them courage to come in there, and the more you can, how you make them feel, you never know. Last week when we did our community event, and how we made that one lady with Alzheimer's and cancer feel. So she might not, like I said, remember it all, but her daughter, who's the legacy, will look back and think, wow.
Yeah, you're right. It's incredibly important. That's right. The, you know, going from feeling isolated, misunderstood, not listened to, all those
absolutely.
Things, you know, to feeling like, oh, there's some people who are interested in me. I actually don't think I'm nuts.
Absolutely.
They're going to do anything they can to help me stay alive, not tell me, you've had it.
You've had it. Yeah. Or it's the end of the road.
Yeah.
The end of the road? Who are you to tell me it's the end of my road?
Exactly.
But brilliant. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you found that an upbeat way to see out 2016. Michelle exudes energy and potential that is highly infectious. As usual, links to resources mentioned in today's show are on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. A reminder that if you are thinking of supporting a charity over the Christmas period, then why not consider Yes to Life? We're the only charity that's directly supporting people with cancer in obtaining integrative medicine. Yes to Life is here to provide people with cancer with good quality information to help them make up their mind what they want to do and then to support them in doing it. Apart from supplying people with personalised information on the integrative medicine strategies that could be useful to them, we have a programme of small grants which is actually enabling people to pay for their programme of supplements or whatever they feel they need. A big thank you to you all for listening this year. I've thoroughly enjoyed bringing you some amazing guests, and I already have some great plans for the show next year. So I hope you'll join me again in 2017. Goodbye.